This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It is September 27th, 2017. Wow, it's the end of September. Oh my gosh. Welcome to Bicycle Talk this week with my co-host, the lovely Fran Storch.
It's late September, and I really should be back at school.
Oh, okay, Rod. Yeah, good reference. Very nice. A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, please text or call at 860-486-9487, or you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com, or you can also visit Bicycle Talk on Facebook. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org or on iTunes. If you'd like to contribute or to be a part of the show as a guest, please contact me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. Business aside, are you ready? Ron's rant of the week. Okay, here it is. I'm going to poke away at my industry. Interbike. Interbike, which is that huge bicycle show here in the U.S., which was not so huge this year, by the way. From the reports that I got back, I spoke with the sales manager yesterday, and he said it was a little grim. Anyway, Interbike has decided, because they've been in Las Vegas for so long, that they wanted to move to a different place, so they're moving to Reno. My apologies to Amber Pierce on bad things that I've said about Reno, by the way, because I know that she is from Reno, and I said something in front of her this weekend at the Farm to Fork Fondo, and she said, wait a second, that's my hometown. So anyway, moving it to Reno. Reno, Nevada, really great. What a lovely idea that we would move the bike show to Reno. Why am I so down on this? Why is this a rant of mine? Because it's still out west. Folks, wake up, Interbike. Get a clue here. You want to make this more friendly for everyone here who works in the bicycle industry, and even for the consumers that come to the consumer show part of it. Put it in the middle of the country where it belongs. If anyone is out there listening from the bike industry, and I know you are because I know you guys, you're Facebook friends of mine, and I know you listen to me every week, why in the world would you put it in Reno? I know.
Isn't it harder to get to Reno than Las Vegas, flight-wise?
Way harder to get to Reno than it is to Las Vegas. It's more expensive to get to Reno than it is to get to Las Vegas. But if you live in California, you can get there real easy.
Shouldn't they put it somewhere that's a hub? That's like an airline hub?
Yeah. You want to hear my suggestion? Minneapolis, St. Paul.
That's a good hub?
I'll tell you, there's a number of reasons why it's a good hub. One of them is that it's centrally located, okay? And it has some big airlines that fly in and out of there. It's pretty common. It's also Minneapolis is also, just so you know, the only city that is on a worldwide bike-friendly list. Okay, Minneapolis-St. Paul is happening right now. Major, big-time happening. And it's there's a list of the top 10 cities in the U.S., which I had in front of me right here, and I seem to have set it aside. But, oh, here it is right here. So here you go down the list. Okay, we're going to just look at this real quick. Number one on the list in the United States, which is locations throughout the United States to find out where the most bike-friendly cities are, is Minneapolis, Minnesota. Minneapolis-St. Paul, right in the middle. They've got more bikeways. They have a more friendly budget. They have a budget, including a $750,000 budget, to build protected bikeways around the city. This is a bike-friendly city. And yeah, it's in the cold zone, but there it is. It's still really bike-friendly. So why not have the bike show around the most bike-friendly city in the U.S.? The second one on the list is Portland, Oregon. The third one on the list is San Francisco, California. Number four, surprise, surprise, didn't see this one coming, is New York, New York. Primarily because they are, you know, making it obviously easy for people who ride bicycles to continue riding their bikes. Number five, blow you away, Detroit, Michigan. Detroit. So why is Detroit such a bike-friendly city? Because everything got so so mowed down when Detroit fell apart that they were able to rebuild with wonderful bike paths and great things for transit. And also, it's the least expensive way to transport yourself other than walking, so it's great. Number six is Cincinnati, Ohio. Number seven is Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Number eight is Boulder, Colorado. Boulder, of course, is Boulder. Boulder always will be Boulder. The only problem with Boulder is it's very expensive to live there, but there's a lot of expensive places. So is San Francisco. Number nine is Austin, Texas, which is also a very big bike-friendly community. They're the island of Texas, I like to call them. Shout out to Austin. And number 10 on the list, Chicago, Illinois. So now we're looking at Chicago, Illinois. We're looking at Minneapolis, okay? And they're both in the center. They're a lot easier to get in and out of.
That was the other place I was going to say, Chicago, because it's right in the middle of the country and it's a huge hub.
Yep, exactly.
For a bunch of airlines.
In 2016, Bicycling Magazine named Chicago the best bike city in America. Commuters have access to 200 miles of paths and trails, and recreational cyclists can enjoy a 20-mile trail along Lake Michigan.
Even I have ridden my bike in Chicago.
I also have ridden it many years ago, but I did. They're planning to have more than 600 miles of dedicated bike lanes in place by 2020.
Do you think we should go visit your son?
I think we should. Hi, Greg, if you're listening. I don't know if he listens to this or not. Never know. But the point being, why are we focusing on cities that are truly unfriendly to bicycle people and health and fitness people? No offense to Reno, but, you know, it's, again, that one's just really hard to get in and out of. And I realize the bike show is looking for an inexpensive place to put their show on, and I certainly understand that, and I understand their budget. But maybe the bike show wouldn't be falling apart, and it truly is, as rapidly as it is, if you were a little more friendly to more folks out there. So this brings me to my rant of the week. Interbike moving to Reno. What a bad idea. Please pay attention. Anyway, that's my industry. That's what they do. And there's a lot of discussion right now about that. On a positive side, we are going to have a shout out to the local folks here. And that would be Bike Mansfield. And why am I shouting out to Bike Mansfield? As I generally always do. I'm going to push on something. We had Tony here last week from BC Co. and other various things that he does. He's active everywhere. He's just he is the Transportation Hartford coordinator at the Center for Latino Progress in Hartford. And Anthony Chirolis was here. Tony Chirolis was here last week. And he also met with, and we had lunch with, Lon Holkren from Bike Mansfield. But the point here being that the Bike Mansfield has got this really, really cool thing going on. And that is that they have a transportation center. And no one knows about this. And we were talking about this at lunch. And it's really kind of a cool thing to do. But if you're biking to work in downtown stores or at UConn and you need a secure place to store your bicycle, you can join the Mansfield Bike Commuter Club. And I can't mention a price here, but it is very inexpensive. And it gives you indoor bike storage with locking bike cages, a private shower and bathrooms, and personal lockers. And you can member access by way of a swipe card from 5 a.m. to midnight, 7 days a week. This is progressive. This is a big deal. Major shout out to Lon on this. He was the one who was behind this. And here we have it. We have a state-of-the-art transportation center right here in Storrs, little old Storrs, Connecticut. And we have this wonderful bike facility. Can you imagine? Listen, Hartford, listen closely. Listen, executives to insurance companies and other major corporations that are in the Hartford area. Let's talk Bridgeport. Let's talk where else can I go here in Connecticut that's big? Waterbury is a big city in Connecticut. New Haven is a big city in Connecticut. Heads up, you guys. Little tiny stores did it right. So why don't you do this there? Why is there not this sponsored by maybe the insurance companies? They could handle something like this. What a wonderful thing. You ride your bike into work. You card yourself in. You put your bike in a locker. You take a shower, and then you go off to work. And it's right there, right in the hub of downtown. I'm going to say Hartford here because Hartford is the obvious place for this sort of thing. And the beauty is you cut down on all this commuter traffic that's going in. You get to utilize all these wonderful bike paths that are starting to come together to bring you into the city. There's going to be a lot more development of that if this happens. So big shout out to Bike Mansfield for putting out the signature state-of-the-art commuter hub for cycling. And if you want to know more about it, come on out and visit us. Check it out, because this is a pretty cool thing. So that's my big shout out of positive today, as far as on a positive side. I think that's a really, really great thing. There's another thing I have to put on here, though, on a positive side, and that is going to be I have to shout out to a company called Santa Cruz. Santa Cruz Bicycles, they make high-end mountain bicycles. And remember how we were having this discussion in previous episodes about the Oregon bike tax, which I am obviously not in favor of. I think that it's kind of a ridiculous charge to be charging bicycles for the use of the road, whereas the transportation costs for the roads are far more influenced by those with motorized vehicles, and they're more damaged by those who drive motorized vehicles. So why not make them pay for it? But anyway, we won't get into that yet again, because that's going back to rant, and I'm trying to be on a positive side right now. And so I am going to shout out positive thoughts to Santa Cruz Bicycles, who they are promising to match the $15 tax on their products by donating to mountain bike trails in the region. So if you go and you buy in Oregon and you buy a Santa Cruz bicycle, they are going to match the $15, and they are going to put it into maintaining and building mountain bike trails in the area. So big shout out there. Hey, other bike companies paying attention to this. This is a good thing. Actually, it'd be a better thing if we didn't have the tax, but we won't get into that right now. We've got too many more things to talk about here today. So anyway, big shout out to Santa Cruz Bicycles. A little promo there for them, but that's what it is. And let's see, what else do I have here on my list? Oh, this is a good one. So we have the infamous bad boy of cycling, or I'm not going to call him bad boy of cycling. I mean, he's had a tough rap, and now that we take a look at the filming and the, you know, going back to the sprint finish where a supposed elbow was thrown out and all that. Peter Sagan. Remember Peter Sagan, Fran? You remember that guy?
Of course.
You know, remember all the controversy around
that? He's a hottie.
And I called him out as being, well, he threw an elbow. You know, I was absolutely wrong, and I admitted it. I truly admitted it after watching the slow motion footage. What he was doing was he was protecting himself from going down in that crash. And unfortunately, he was tossed out of the Tour de France for that activity.
And then he promptly won the next thing he did, right?
Yeah, but get this, not only that, there's a lot more to it. So Peter Sagan, who has won the world championships twice, just won it again. So
probably because he rested after getting thrown out of the Tour de France.
He certainly had a lot of rest time.
Right.
Yeah,
it worked to his advantage.
But it says here, Slovakia's Peter Sagan pipped Norway's Alexander Kristoff in a photo finish.
What is to pip?
I don't know. You might want to look that up. I just find that really funny. It's in a Bicycling Magazine article. I sent you over this so you can go to this link. It's very funny. I have not heard pipped. I would think nipped would be something that someone might do, but pipped, that's very interesting. So he had a photo finish in a historic third straight world title in Bergen on Sunday. Sagan emerged out of the final corner in perfect position on Kristoff's shoulder and just had enough to edge past the home favorite as Australia's Michael Matthews took third. So, yay, Peter Sagan. Good for you. After his win, Sagan dedicated this victory to Italian Michele Scarponi, who died in April following a crash with a van near his home in Italy. He would have turned 38 on Monday. Peter Sagan says, quote unquote, "I want to dedicate this third world title first to Michele Scarponi because he has a birthday tomorrow."
In Britain, the word pip as a verb, one of the uses of the word pip is simply to beat someone by a narrow margin. And the origin of the word is from blackball.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's a British thing. When you pip somebody, you beat them by a narrow margin.
All right. Mm-hmm. Who wrote this article? That's very interesting.
Oh.
I don't know. It's a Bicycling Magazine article. So anyway, yes. And the last thing that Peter said was, "I'm very sorry this year. I want to wish luck to his family." So he also went on to dedicate this victory to his wife, who is expecting a baby, saying, "It's very nice to finish this season. I'm very happy." So, yay, Peter Sagan. He is a character. I sent you over a link, Fran, and it's in Bicycling Magazine if you want to look it up. And there is a comical picture of Peter Sagan podium with two other, with second and third place, and he has his tongue stuck out, and he's just doing a classic Peter Sagan where he's goofing to the camera. It looks like he cut all his hair off, too.
He did.
Yeah, it looks like it.
He was so cute.
Click on the link. It's a really funny photo. So if you want to see the funny photo, I would definitely go over there. I would definitely go to Bicycling Magazine and check it out, and it'll talk about it a little bit, and you can get to see that really funny picture. But anyway, in winning, Sagan joins a rare company of three-time world champions, including Belgian legend Eddy Merckx. Ah, Eddie. I bow to Eddie. Eddie is the best. Eddie is the king. And he is the first rider to do so in successive years. It's something special. For sure, it doesn't change anything. But for me, it's something very nice, he said. So how cool is that? You know, you get bad boyed out of the Tour de France on a bad call, on a bad referee call, and then you go on to win the world championships for the third time. So I got to say, this is a very, very good thing for Peter Sagan. So I wanted to bring that up in today's show because it's, you know, it's important. This is important stuff. You know, bike racing is still a near and dear to me thing. I really do enjoy it. I enjoy watching it. I enjoyed participating in it for many, many years. And I still promote it because I am in the process of promoting my second cyclocross race of the season in another week. But we can talk about that a little bit later on. So moving on, there's an interesting article, once again, Bicycling Magazine and Velo News always have interesting articles. So I'm constantly looking for them for sources of information. And there's an article by Celine Yeager, who writes for them often. And this is a twice-a-week training plan. And no time, no problem. This turbocharged plan will keep you fit when life gets crazy busy. And we all know how life can get crazy busy. Life happens, and sometimes a whole lot of life happens at once, leaving you very precious little time for that riding and exercising part. The good news is that you can hang on to your hard-earned strength and fitness in just a couple of hours a week. Research shows that twice a week, strength training is effective for muscle development, or even just one session a week can boost your core strength. So what Celine is talking about doing is to work on more of your core strength, do some circuit training, and get yourself stronger by doing that sort of thing. Core strength is essential. I've been actually trying to focus on it a lot more lately myself because I think it's really important.
You have? I haven't noticed.
That's because you don't come to my spin classes or to the gym with me after I get done with my spin classes. Mm-hmm. So you wouldn't notice that, would you?
Yeah.
Because that's where I'm
doing. Do you notice me working on my core strength?
Yeah, I see you doing it all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I do it elsewhere than where you
sure
do
you
it.
Do.
That's all. So the other thing is that I've been teaching a really interesting class at the community center, and it was something that was kind of devised by one of the yoga instructors and myself, and we call the class Spoga. And what it is we do a half an hour of spinning followed by a half an hour of yoga. And it's great if you're a yoga person who wants to flirt with the idea of maybe doing something more cardiovascularly aggressive than your possible yoga class. And then it's really particularly good for those of us like myself who are horribly inflexible and really need to work more on our core strength. And yoga, of course, is a great place to go there. And Bill was away this week, so Nanette was in last night teaching the class, and she made me do things that were requiring a lot more of my core and also balance. And gosh, it's hard. It's really, really hard. But these are things that make you better on your bike, so it's an important thing to focus on. And so working on that core is a really, really important thing. As we start progressing here over here in the cold area of the country, even though it has not been very cold, as we go in that direction, this is a good thing to incorporate into your winter training schedule. And I would highly recommend that. The other thing that she has here is air squats. Stand with your feet wider than your shoulder width, your feet turned out a little bit. Extend your arms straight out in front of you. Squat down a little bit until your butt drops below your knee level, and quickly extend your legs and jump into the air. Jumping into the air part, I'm a little rough on. It's not that. It's the landing part that I have a problem with. But that's those are going to be bursts. And the squats and lunges are important. She does have a clicked link here to how to do your squats and lunges without injuring yourself, because you do have to be careful on those. So planks are a number of things that are on this are definitely planks. Side step up, lift legs, different things like that. So we're really working on that. And then one of my absolute favorites, Tabata turbocharges. So if you're not familiar with the Tabata exercise, Izumi Tabata was the Japanese exercise physiologist who came up with this idea back in the 60s. By the way, this isn't new news. This is old news. It's very, very trendy right now because we're now learning all about this high burst, interval exercise that we're supposed to be doing in less than an hour's period of time. And the Tabata drills just fall right into place there. And they're high-intensity interval training workouts. They're super short, but they're extremely demanding. They train every energy system so you're ready to go when it's time to go. And it's a great way to stay in shape when your time is tight. And I can give you a rough idea here. Warm up for 5 to 10 minutes. Pedal as hard as possible. You're going for a maximum power output for 20 seconds. Just 20 seconds doesn't sound hard, does it? Then you soft pedal for 10 seconds. But then you repeat that 6 to 8 times. When I teach Tabatas in my spin class, I will do eight of them. So you're 20 seconds on, you're 10 seconds off. And when you're on, you want to be as on as you can be. You want to really be putting it out there. Don't cheat yourself on this, because it really doesn't work if you don't put out the maximum effort that you can. And the soft pedal, I'm talking no effort on the pedals whatsoever. I'm talking complete release of resistance, to the point of if you're, even if you're doing this outside, just coast. Don't even pedal. Don't even do that. Although I do like to keep my legs moving so they don't cramp. So, and then between each of these, you rest for 4 to 5 minutes, and then you go back and you repeat. So when I teach class, I usually do 4 sets of these. And I will tell you that 4 sets of Tabatas, you're done. You've had enough. It's really, really hard. So I love the idea of Tabatas. Tabatas also, just because they work really well if you're teaching an indoor cycling class and you want to keep people's interest and you want to keep them from getting bored, because you certainly don't get bored doing Tabatas. Although my class this morning didn't get very bored either. I think I worked them pretty hard. But you can always come up with different exercises to keep people, keep people's interest up there. But Tabatas are great. They really, really do work well. So she's a big believer. Celine is a big believer on those too. So that's definitely a good thing. You want to make sure that you get in at least a couple of days a week. I'm more of a, you know, if you're going to get a couple of days in a week, get a couple of days in during the week and then do some rides on the weekend. You know, maybe have some rides planned, possibly with your local club, possibly going somewhere to do a ride like we did last weekend. We were at, this gives me an opportunity to talk about where we were last weekend. Last weekend was the final of the Farm to Fork Fondos put on by Renegade Sports. And it was in the Berkshires, and the lovely Fran Storch was able to ride in that one. And it was a beautiful ride, wasn't it, Fran?
It was absolutely breathtaking.
Yeah, and we had some really, really unusual weather last weekend. Because this is the end of September here. And the end of September, we're dealing with, you know, leaves changing, getting cooler, kind of chilly outside. And
I was fully expecting that this was going to be, oh, this is going to be the first Farm to Fork Fondo where I really have to be concerned about the arm warmers and knee warmers. Not a chance.
No, the only reason you would want an arm warmer on was to keep the sun off of you.
Oh, goodness. Yes. No, this was one of those Farm to Fork Fondos where you had to make sure that you went to every rest stop and you hydrated well.
Yeah, no
and
kidding.
I was actually, now the thing about these rides is that, you know, if I ride a 60-mile ride, I'm going to stop once, maybe twice. And when you go to the Farm to Fork Fondo on the 60-mile ride, there's five rest stops.
Well, you know, the whole point behind it, and if anyone is ever interested in doing these, I'm sure Tyler's going to have a bunch more next year. I know that these were very, very popular because they're extremely well done, very well organized. And, you know, a shout out to Tyler Wren and his crew. He's got a great crew that works for him. They do a fabulous job of keeping everybody happy through the whole event. He sold out yet again last weekend, so you couldn't have put yourself into it if you wanted to, because he was completely sold out. It's based around food, and it's based around not only just food, but it's based around farms and the farms that produce the food that we eat. And open farmland is also one of the themes there too, because as cyclists, we are always looking for that nice quiet road to ride on, so you don't have to, you know, deal with cars and trucks and all those things that I commonly rant about while talking about bicycling. And the more farms we have, the more open space we have, the less cars we have, the less trucks we have. So the only trucks you're going to deal with are the delivery trucks that are picking up the farm products and bringing them into the more populated areas. So it's really, really a good thing. And there's a lot of money that is contributed back to the local communities around this whole thing. So if you get a chance, you know, a little shout out to Tyler Wren, Renegade Sports, and the Farm to Fork Fondos. They're great. They're really, really nice events. And last week was the last one, number six of all. And it's a little sad because we're not going to be able to see them anymore, but I'm sure we'll be talking with them. Tyler even said to me as I was leaving, we'll talk soon. So anyway, hopefully.
So you're expecting to do this next year?
I'm hoping to do it again next year. It would be a nice thing. I enjoyed myself. I was there as Peddlin' Ron. So I was there as the voice. So I got to, encourage people and get them started and talk up the event and just kind of keep things flowing along, which is fun. So I hope to continue. Yeah. Yeah, it was a good time. It was a really good time. So anyway, if you don't get a chance to do something like that, there are other rides out there. There's the Great River Ride, which is coming up in 2 weekends, I think.
It's October 8th. It's a beautiful ride.
I don't know if it is on the 8th. It might be the weekend after this year.
No, it's October 8th.
It is October. Oh, it's the day after the cyclocross race.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
It's Sunday,
gotcha.
October 8th, and it was rated by Bicycling Magazine as one of the most beautiful rides that you could ever do, and it's beautiful but grueling. It is a very difficult ride. It's very hilly. I have done the Sentry before a number of times, and it's got close to 9,000 feet of climbing. It's like, yeah. I clocked 8,800 feet once. Yeah, so it's very, very hilly. But if you don't mind spending the day on the bike, I mean, you have to get there early in the morning, and I don't know what the weather's going to be like, but there have been years when I've gotten there at for a 7 a.m. start, and there's frost on the ground.
Yeah.
So, and then, you know, I dressed pretty warmly for that ride. And I don't know what it's going to be like next weekend. It's it might not be that cold. And some years, it's not so cold. But every year that I used to go to that, I would do the Sentry. But I haven't been in a few years, unfortunately. But it is so beautiful. And I've found myself, I'll round a corner and I'll come down a sweeping, because as much as there are incredible hills to climb, there are incredible sweeping descents. And you come down and you're riding along a beautiful river with a gorgeous mountain coming up behind it. And the fall foliage is perfect right then. It's so breathtaking.
It is really a beautiful area.
It's a really, really beautiful ride.
Because once again, you're back in the Berkshires like we were this past weekend. So you're in the Berkshire Mountains, which are in western Massachusetts.
Yeah.
And you get these fabulous views on top of some of the climbs. And
really
there are climbs.
Spectacular. Oh, there's no point. It's a very, very hilly ride. I had thought about doing the metric. I would have to talk to you about it, but it's the day after cyclocross.
It is the day after cyclocross, so I'll have to see if I have legs or mind for it at that point. But we'll see. We'll see. Just so you know, the Great River Ride has been rated as one of the best century rides in the USA. That's quote-unquote by Bicycling Magazine and the League of American Bicyclists. Gorgeous but grueling is bicycling's description for what we believe
is what it is.
The most challenging century in New England.
Yeah,
this is a must-do for event for any cyclist.
Yeah.
So if you want to find out more about that, I would encourage you to go to newhorizonbikes.com. So all one word, New Horizons Bikes, and that's Horizons with an S. .com, and you will find it right there. Now, New Horizons, big shout out to Don and Mary. They're personal friends, love those guys. They do so much for cycling.
And they have an Australian Shepherd.
And yes, they do. They do. There's always a dog there, which is nice. So just so you know, they work with the Pioneer Valley Parking Commission, Mass Bike, the Friends of the Columbia Greenway Rail Trail, city governments and organizations, all to improve cycling in the region. So they're not just a bicycle shop and an event coordinator, but they're also really, really involved in bicycle advocacy. They attend the annual National Bike Summit in Washington, D.C. They're responsible for the Share the Road signs that are on the Westfield streets. They have bike racks on all the PVTA, the Pioneer Valley Transit Association Southern Tier routes. They're an organizer for the Berkshire Brevet Randonneur Series. So they've also encouraged the city of Westfield to approve a $700,000 bond to complete the Columbia Greenway design. Now, if you haven't been up there to check this out, this Columbia Greenway design, this whole interaction of and connection of all the bike trails, this goes down into Connecticut. And right now, it currently ends in Westfield, and then there's a little bit of a gap, and then it comes back up again in Southampton, Massachusetts, which is really just the next town north. But there's a little bit of a gap that hasn't been completed yet. But the this is so cool because it's also known as the Farmington Valley Greenway, I think is what it's called, Farmington Valley Trail. But anyway, it's it runs all the way down through Connecticut until it gets to Plainville, Connecticut, which is about, it's a little over halfway up from the coast. And they're still working on that. There's a live for rail project, which kind of runs through there, too. So they're having a little bit of a little more challenge there to get that through. But then connects over to Southington and eventually down into Cheshire and Hampden and all the way down to New Haven, which a lot of that trail is done, too. So there's this huge, and this is all paved trail, too. So it's paved and it's well marked. and it rides along the Farmington River Valley, so you're along the river a lot of the time, and it goes up into Massachusetts. And when that gets complete, you're going to be able to ride all the way up into Northampton, Mass., and then Northampton over to Amherst, and Amherst over to Belchertown. It's unbelievable. If you're concerned about, well, I'm not really sure if I want to ride a bike, or I'd like to get, you know, my friend or my parent or my child or whoever else you want to influence into getting into cycling, put them on one of these bike trails. They're unbelievable. They're safe. There are no cars, which is a bonus, because we're not real lovers of cars here. And, you know, you can get someone to get out and experience the love and the beauty of riding a bicycle. So it's a pretty cool thing. So, again, I really like to push the folks that are doing all the good work out there, and New Horizon Sports and the Great River Ride are just, they're way up there on top of my list. So, once again, a shout out to Donna Mary and to the Great River Ride. And they've been doing this for a long time. They have 5 different rides available. I know this is a little out of sorts here because it's out of calendar, but I really wanted to mention this today. They have 5 rides: a 125-mile ride, a 111-mile ride, ouch on both of those, an 85-mile ride, a 62-mile ride, which would be that metric century that Fran was mentioning earlier, and they also have a 35-mile ride. And you get a water bottle, and there's T-shirts for the first 300 people, but, you know, we'll see. You may be out of that by now. They may have already pre-registered that many people. But you definitely want to check out the Great River Ride. Everyone I have talked to that has done it, and Fran has done it a number of times. She is a return participant of that particular ride. She just raves about it. Everyone raves about it.
I've done the 112. There's a 125?
There's a 125.
I don't think there used to be a 125.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing that, but that's what I'm reading right here. So it looks like they got a 125 on there, too.
Well, they're
because it's a 200K.
Yeah, they're part of the Randonneur series.
Right,
yeah.
So it becomes a brevet at 200 kilometers, so right. 125. So the other thing they recommend, if you're doing the 200K, it starts at 6 a.m., so they'd really require you to have lights on your bike for that one. Yeah, amazing, huh? Yeah, you're starting early in the morning. That starts at 6 a.m. The 170K, there's also a 170K here. That's the 112 at 7 a.m.
That's the one they
want you to roll out by 7 a.m. on that one.
That's
so
what
these
you do.
Start pretty early, but then again, you're going to spend a lot of your day out there because you're not going to go fast. This is not a ride that you go to win all sorts of Strava points and brag to your friends about how fast you did it and your average speed. I don't even want to go down there. That's a dead horse I don't want to beat on right now, but we could do that another time. Anyway, so this is not what you're going there for. You're going there for the experience of the beauty of riding your bike in the Berkshires with fall foliage in New England. I mean, it doesn't get any better than this. It's really, really nice.
Yeah.
Their 85-mile route leaves at between 9 and 9:30, and the metric century starts between 9:30 and 11 a.m. Ooh, now you have my interest. If I don't have to get up at 7 o'clock to go up there and do that,
you're going to have to get up at 7 o'clock.
Well, I know, but if I don't have to be there by 7 o'clock, that might be a little more enticing to me. So I know they'd love to see me.
Yeah.
And then they have a 35-mile ride, which begins at noon. So it's a recreational ride on hilly and winding roads. Riders of all ages and abilities are welcome. So they do also recommend a 34x28 cog on your bicycle, so you need to have a fairly small gear on there.
Do I have that?
Yeah, you've got that. That's not a problem. That's not a problem at all. And, you know, my latest thing, which I really have been endorsing, and now you have it on your bike, is I'm really loving 28C tires.
Right.
It's probably because I'm getting old.
It's the new thing.
It's a new thing, but it's really a good thing for people that are.
It's a science thing.
It is. It is a science thing.
It's not for old or new. It's just they did a study and they found out that when you do tires of that width, you actually go faster.
It's more aerodynamic. They put these tires into a wind tunnel test, and the wind tunnel test says that all you people, sorry about this, but all you people that spent all that money on all those big, tall, deep dish aero rims that were supposed to make you faster, and they do make you faster.
In certain conditions.
You could have done it on a set of 28C tires.
So 28C tires will make you as fast as aero tires?
Yeah, faster. As aero wheels, yeah, faster.
Okay, so those funny fat tires you put, no, they're not fat. I mean, we're not talking fat bike fat. We're not even talking mountain bike fat.
No.
But they do look fatter than
the
one I had.
That I put on your bike.
They make you faster than, oh boy.
They make you faster than investing a couple $1,000 in a pair of carbon fiber 50 millimeter wheels. Yes, it is all true. It is all true. And you know why? Do you know what the reason is behind that?
It's science.
Well, it is science, but let me explain the science a little bit. So the idea behind putting an aerodynamic wheel on your bike is that it pushes the air, disperses the air out a little bit more and makes you slice through the air better, right?
Yes.
But as you're, and anybody who's out there in the Yukon engineering world can back me up on this one. But if you're, you're dispersing air is what you're doing. With aerodynamics, you're dispersing air. You're pushing it off to the side, so you're making it so you can slice through it quicker and easier. And so the deep dish aero rims that were 50 millimeters or even some of them even bigger than that, like if you're looking at a time trial wheel or a triathlete's wheel, some of them will be as big as 80 millimeters. So they're really, really tall rims. They're just pushing that air out and further out to the side so that it makes your wheel slice through a lot faster. Now, that only happens, let it be known, that only happens when you exceed speeds of 24 to 25 miles per hour. Okay, so here's the big myth. People think, you know, they put these wheels on their bikes and they go, I'm so much faster now I put these wheels on their bike. And they average 15 to 17 miles an hour on a ride. No, you're not. I mean, you may be in certain spots going down hills. You may be on a flat road where you're able to achieve 25 miles an hour because you've got a big flat road ahead of you, possibly a little tailwind to keep yourself moving. But if you're out riding at 15 miles an hour and you have invested thousands of dollars in your wheels, we love you, those of us in the bike industry. We really do, because we love the support that you give us, and we really appreciate that. But you kind of did it to look cool, not really to be fast.
Well, they didn't know. And people
they didn't.
The study didn't come out.
You're
this
right.
is what Mr. Schwalbe says. He
yeah.
says that
yeah, Schwalbe tires. Yeah.
The answer, so why do wide tires roll better than narrow ones? The answer lies in tire deflection. Each tire is flattened a little under load. This creates a flat contact area. At the same inflation pressure, a wide and a narrow tire have the same contact area. A wide tire is flattened over its width, whereas a narrow tire has a slimmer but longer contact area. The mm-hmm. flattened area can be considered detrimental to tire rotation. Because of the longer flattened area of the narrow tire, the wheel loses more of its roundness and produces more deformation during the rotation. In a wide tire, the flattened area is shorter in length and doesn't have so much effect on the rolling direction. The tire stays rounder and therefore it rolls better.
That's good. That's really good.
Yeah.
The other thing is, with that deflection, it's also deflecting air out further so that the air that comes around the tire and then comes into the center of the wheel is pushed out further, similar to what it would be with an aerodynamic rim. So you get double bonuses here, and that's why the wind tunnel tests come out very positive with a wide tire.
Everybody's quoting that Schwalbe thing. That I'm looking around, and everybody's quoting Mr. Schwalbe.
Well, that's a good thing. That's a really good thing to know. The other thing is, and this is an extra added bonus that goes along with this, is depending on what your body weight is, you can reduce your pressure in your tires.
That's
right. And what that does is it makes it a lot more
comfortable ride.
And so when you're riding on our kind of, I'm going to call them bony New England roads, because we have some rough roads. We have chip seal that we put down to preserve our roads, and that creates a vibration on your bike and on your body.
So what's the purpose of that stuff they put down in Massachusetts? It's not chip seal.
What stuff?
Yeah, when you go ride on those roads in Massachusetts, there's all the stuff on the roads.
I don't know what stuff you're referring to.
I don't know. I mean, some of it, it's like there's, let's see, it looks like whiteout for roads that they put on it. They put on cracks. And then other places, there's just like, they look like...
Oh, you mean like the...
They look like little ponds, except there's no water in them.
Yeah,
and then other places, there's just like random gravel. And to make it even more fun, they have lots of shade. So like you see patches of sun and patches of shade. And then it's, a whole combination of that stuff. It's like riding on granola.
So that's a crack filler is what it is. So when the roads get cracks in them... They take a tar-like substance,
yeah,
and they seal those cracks so that,
yeah,
they don't get bigger, therefore making a pothole and, you know, making...
They're very pretty to look at.
A
you know what I'd like to do?
In a beat-up road. Yes.
When I go over them, I do this. I go, so it makes my voice go,
They're that long?
They're beautiful shapes. They look like mazes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like looking in a very disorganized, like a spider web on acid, on the road. And then you go over those, and then you go over little, little potholes and dents and chunks of gravel, and it's great riding in Massachusetts.
I think that's what they are. I think they're just patches. They're just little, you know, they're seam sealers or whatever you want to call them.
Yes.
To keep the road from getting bigger seams and potholes and all.
Yeah.
Because some of the roads in Massachusetts, especially when you get over that western part of the state, these are great descriptions, by the way, Fran. When you get over that western part of the state, they're not as well maintained
as
some of the other
roads. It makes me hungry for granola.
It makes you hungry for granola.
Yeah.
Explain, please.
Well, because it reminds me of granola. It's like riding on granola.
The way your mind works, I am never quite sure. So that's good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, all this from the Great River Ride.
Yeah. Well, they've got some of those roads there. But I, the Great River Ride, I don't remember it being as much like that. But certainly when you're in Central and Western Mass, you start getting into interesting road issues like that. I was very impressed by the whiteout on the road, except that it's not white. It's black.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Another place you can look this up to, it is on Bike Reg too. So if you want to sign up for the Great River Ride on Bike Reg, you can do that.
I still highly recommend riding bicycles in Massachusetts. Massachusetts, I would say that Massachusetts is as wonderful and gorgeous as Connecticut. When you get out in the country, they have the same deal going on. It's an old state. It's a state that was settled early.
It's like we were talking about that. We were talking about
Connecticut. Like that.
Some of the other roads. Maine is another one,
Rural New Jersey is like that,
yep,
too.
New Jersey, definitely.
Like, well, you got Joe's got the farm over there, and Dave's got the farm over there, so we got to make a road from Dave to Joe's farm, and then Dave and Joe got to get into town, so we got to make a road to town, and then you got to go out of town in the other direction. You want to go down towards the shore, so we got to make another road in that direction, and then we don't want to just ride on the state highway, so we're going to make a road that goes off the state highway and goes over to Frank's farm. And so all of a sudden, you've got a spider web of roads. And that have been created a long time ago. So you got that going on in Central Jersey. I'm pretty sure you got it going on in Maryland and West Virginia in some places. Well, definitely West Virginia, because you do Bike Virginia in West Virginia too.
Oh, yeah.
And you definitely got it going on in Connecticut and Massachusetts. Not so much in Vermont, because Vermont is so hilly that, they have real mountains, so you have roads that go alongside the mountains, except that the state roads in Vermont are not so busy. They are quite rideable.
They are, and they're riding down, they're running down these long river valleys.
And same
so
with
you can be
New
on
Hampshire.
Them for a long time, you know, and still be relatively flat.
I think it kind of depends where you are, but Connecticut and Massachusetts, and I would say probably Western Rhode Island, and getting into Western Rhode Island. Rhode Island's not very big, and then you've got a lot of coast, and you've got urban and coast in Rhode Island, so then you start losing your roads to some extent. But depending where you are,
there's a little
nice
bit over
Island.
There. When you get near the Connecticut border in Rhode Island, there's definitely some stuff out there. There's also roads that just kind of disappear out there.
Yeah.
So you got to keep your eyes open as to where you're going,
right?
Because there are roads that you'll be riding along on, and then they are just not there anymore. And
but Connecticut and Massachusetts are definitely tremendous overall for riding, just
they
in
are.
Terms of scenery and networks of roads. And you don't have like the choice of just the out and back.
Right.
You have a lot. You can pick a direction to go, and you can change up. You're like, I want to go about 25 miles, and you can change up the road route just a little bit and go on a different road today and a different road tomorrow. And you got a lot of that going on in these states.
Right. And if you're not from the area and you're planning on coming and visiting here, first of all, you should always get a hold of Pedlin, Ron, and Fran because, you know, we would love to show you around.
Yeah.
But if you're unable to do that, remember that if you go on to Ride with GPS, which most everybody knows about that rides a bike, if you go on to Ride with GPS and look under the username Pedlin, Ron, you'll find that I keep almost all of my rides open to the public. So if you're looking to go on one of those rides, then you should definitely check it out. I was telling someone last weekend, they said they would really like to come and ride in this area. And they said, what ride would you recommend on your list? And I suggested the Two Bridges ride because it's been a very popular ride. And it's just so beautiful. There's just so many gorgeous places to ride on that ride.
And you get to stop at the Vanilla Bean.
You get to stop at the Vanilla Bean. You get to get that unbelievable view up at the Golden Lamb as you're looking down over their 1,000-acre farm with the beautiful stone walls. And then you also get to go over the newly constructed covered bridge. I mean, it's just so many highlights on
that. Hi, Tyler.
Ride. Yeah. Yeah, we're reaching out here to you, Tyler. I'm trying to get you over there. I know that my friend Amber has been doing the same thing. We're pushing hard to get the Farm to Fork Fondo to put an event on out here. But because we have farms and we have lots of open land and it's really pretty out here.
And we got forks and we like to eat.
Yeah, and we do like to eat. Eating is a good thing. It's
yeah.
good. It's excellent. So anyway, we're going to move on from this and we're going to go to a couple of other things here that I wanted to bring up. One is because it is coming up soon and I'll probably talk about this a little bit more next week, but I'm going to focus on the Connecticut Series of Cross, and it's a cyclocross race series. And it has a number I think there's 8 total on here. And there are 8 different events, and they're all based in Connecticut. And I am actually the race director on the first 2 of those events, one which will be coming up on October 7th. The first one was September 9th, and that one is over. You can find out about this by going to www.ctseriesofcx.com. So ctseriesofcross.com, and it'll give you a little bit more information about that, including as we complete each race, you'll see results there. And these races, I'm a big fan of cross because if you want to try bike racing, but you're a little worried about it, you're worried about the closeness of the pack and all that, and what if I get dropped? What am I going to do? Cross is a great way to get started. The race is only for 40 to 50 minutes, and you're going to work really hard. But if you go to either of the 2 races that I promote, and this is a promoter's choice on this one, but either of the 2 that I promote, because we are a little bit smaller and we're a little more grassroots oriented, you will not get pulled out of the race. I instruct my officials to, if you get lapped in the race, I want you to stay. I do not want anyone pulled. So you get to complete the whole thing, whether you want to or not. Sometimes you want to get pulled, but you can do the whole thing. And they tend to be a little more festive and fun, especially the small ones. So all the races in Connecticut tend to be a little bit more on the small side. So we started out with Riverfront Cross on September 9th. Mansfield Hollow is coming up on October 7th. Brody Cross, which is new this year, will be October 21st, followed the next day by Belltown Cross, which is October 22nd. Cheshire Cross, which has been around for a number of years now, and that will be on November 4th. Newtown Team 26 Cross is going to be on November 5th. So there's a weekend of cross racing in Connecticut there too. March Farms Cross is on November 24th. And the end of the series is at Elm City Cross. Shout out to Kurt on December 17th, where you could get any kind of weather, of course, but that's okay. That's what Cross is all about, so it's really fun. So
there's one more event I should talk about.
Yes, talk.
Okay, it's the East Lyme Bike and Barbecue, and that's coming up on Sunday, this coming Sunday.
Oh, nice.
So for more information, you can go to, you can Google East Lyme Bike and Barbecue. It's at eltownhall.com. And you can find out all about it. And they have some really funny names for the rides. They have a horrible 100. They have a miserable metric, a mild metric, a 38 special, an easy 26, and a historical house tour that is 9 miles, and a great barbecue after. So if you're interested in that, you can go to eltownhall.com. News and events, and you can find it, or you can just Google East Lyme Bike and Barbecue, and that's Sunday coming up, October 1st.
That sounds good too.
Okay,
very good. So a couple of really big races that we have going on, which are certainly worth going to if you want to be a spectator and check this out. We've got the KMC Crossfest coming up between September 28th and October 1st, and that is in Thompson, Connecticut. So that's a big deal. A lot of people. We get thousands of riders to show up to that. And then we also have the Gloucester Grand Prix of Cross, October 14th and 15th in Gloucester, Massachusetts. And that's probably the biggest race in New England. So that's a big deal. Shout out to my friends down in Bucks County. We will have the Bucks Bike Club's Covered Bridge Ride, October 15th, 2017. Beautiful foliage, lots of Bucks County, Pennsylvania's finest covered bridges, rides to suit every ability. And anyway, so you might want to check that out. So there's lots of great stuff going on right now. It's certainly, the season is not over yet. We have lots of cycling ahead of you. And my name is Pedlin Ron, and you have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. You can send us an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com, and you also can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you would like to contribute or be on the show as a guest, please contact me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedlin Ron. Remember, keep that rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS, Storrs.